Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Coplin. Featuring out and about, thought-provoking conversations on the street. We consider topics with local relevance and global significance. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative and try to explore whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the Arts Hour, I feature in-depth interviews with local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. And for this, the Topic Hour, I go out and about, talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different subjects that affect us all. If you'd like to find out more information about the show, you can go to the show's website. It's aquestionofbalance.com. You can hear podcasts of all my past shows there. So this week we're considering for our topic, if you are for something, must you be against something? Just been thinking about this recently with the political climate and also with the various things that have been going on involving the police. So I thought this might be an interesting one to look at. Let's hear my first conversation. Hello, my name's Ruth Coplin from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What is your name?
Curtis Relaford.
Well, thanks so much for talking to me today. You're downtown here. Just give us a very brief description of what you're doing here.
Well, Ruth, all out of honesty, I just came back from Louisiana from a funeral. And a long story short, that funeral say, Kurt, you got to live your life now and find joy. And my joy is finding out what's going on in the United States and stepping out there and doing something about it. And my way of making a difference is bringing awareness to all these killings that's going on. I'm not with no group. I'm not with no organization. I'm with me and following my heart. And it's speaking to me loudly that somebody need to do something different.
Yes.
And not focus on so much of the negative and the killing, but focus on love.
Yes.
I don't know how this fit in with your program, but I'm focused on love, and I'm not hating on nobody.
Yes.
I'm not hating on the cops. I'm not hating on these groups.
Yeah.
But the groups do a lot of talking, and nothing get done. And the cops, I had a lot of experiences with those cops.
Yep.
A lot of run-ins to make me say, enough is enough. This has been going on all of my life.
Yes.
And this been, and when I get pulled over driving this peace train, I drive a truck with peace wrote all over it, playing loud music saying what the world needs now is love. And they pulled me over for that. I got 10 tickets last year for driving this thing and getting donations to take food and clothes to the Native Americans in Arizona. You guys, you give millions and billions to the politicians, and I can't even get gas money to go from here to Arizona to take food and clothes to the Native Americans.
Yeah.
So.
Well, just to speak to the topic that we're doing this week we're considering if you're for something, must you be against something? Trevor Noah on The Daily Show said, in America, if you take a stand for something, you're automatically against something else. It's either one way or the other. But with the police shootings, it shouldn't have to work that way. For example, if you're pro Black Lives Matter, you are assumed to be anti-police. And if you're pro police, then you surely hate black people. In reality, you can be pro cop and pro black, which is what we should all be. It should be what we're aiming for. You shouldn't have to choose between the police and the citizens they're sworn to protect. And it seems that from what you're saying, you are trying to find a common ground here. And it would seem, though, with the current political climate where people are so divided, also with the issues of the recent shootings by police and of the police, that it's a challenge for many of us. We do feel that if we're for one thing, we need to be against another thing. And I was just wondering, do you think it would enable the finding of more solutions if more of us were able to hold two views at once. You know, just because we feel strongly for something, it doesn't mean we have to be against something else. It's about respecting different points of view. Is that something that you adhere to?
I agree to respect. Everybody should respect each other. No, I am against guns and violence. I'm against the way the angry police are out there. There's angry, racist police. And yes, I am against that.
But that doesn't make you against all police, or does it?
No, don't make me against all police.
No,
it doesn't.
That's what I mean about holding a complexity of view, because some people feel you can't criticize the police at all. Otherwise, you're going to undermine their role. Whereas what I'm arguing, or what I'm putting forward, is that maybe holding more complex ideas, like you're saying, that some police can be criticized, but it doesn't mean they're all bad, is perhaps helpful to finding solutions.
Well, my solution was walking with the police and the veterans, bringing awareness to post-traumatic stress. Mm. And the police on the police force are going through post-traumatic stress. Mm. And if you, and I think some people don't know how to deal with that.
Yes.
And they hit them at the right time, and it came out the Saturday neck, and that's what happened. And that balance that you talk about, I believe, is somebody needs to be there talking about love. That's the bottom line.
Yes.
And the balance will come from the getting with the police and going down there and have them with the community.
Yes.
And we have a community concern gathering with the police, and we do a peace walk with the police.
Yes.
So we can get to know them.
So that idea of having a peace walk would be kind of eliminating the for and against. It would be for love, but that's sort of overarching the different perhaps points of view, bringing people together by a common view.
Yeah, it's a bridge. You got to have some kind of bridge to reach, to reach them.
Mm.
And that bridge is a peace walk.
Right.
I mean, asking them to join the community, be a model for the rest of the United States of how we came together with the police, because this place is a bubble.
Yes.
Yeah. And we are, I mean, I had a lot of beautiful people to join in with this and give me proper respect.
Mm.
But I'm telling them, you guys, we all are in this together.
Yes. Yeah.
Police, and I've been thanking the police for their work.
Yes.
So I don't know where I fit in with this, but I sure have a lot of ideas, and I'm not one to sit down with my ideas. I take action.
Yes.
And I've been doing this since 05.
Mm.
And I know that my stuff is clear, too. I got 30 years clean and sober, so my pistons are firing clear.
Yes.
And I know what got me 30 years was all about love, because there was a lot of anger and hatred out there. Mm. And the bridge is a peace walk with those officers, having a community circle here with the officers and just talking about the differences.
Yes.
And how people approach, and the balances. We have these talks in order for us to learn how to talk to each other.
Yes.
We facing a moral crisis, and those who do nothing invite shame and violence. Those who act boldly recognize that their rights as well as reality. And if that's what I mean by we journeying together in a circle and recognizing all these differences.
Yes.
I could go on and on.
No.
I don't know.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts. Thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you for allowing me and giving me this opportunity, Ruth. Thank you.
Thank you. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. Right now, we're featuring Out and About, thought-provoking conversations on the street. And if you have any thoughts about our topic discussion, do email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. I'm always interested to hear your thoughts. That's ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. And the idea of the Out and About feature is I just talk to the people who are willing to talk to me. I'm not trying to present any particular views. I feature all the interviews that I take. And so I'm just hoping that by listening, we can have our own thoughts stimulated and maybe rethink things or be thinking about something that we haven't previously been thinking about in that way. So hopefully that is how you're experiencing this. Thanks very much to Curtis there. I'm always very grateful to people for stopping and talking to me, sometimes about quite complex subjects, just apropos of nothing. So thanks very much to Curtis there. We're going to go to a break now, but I'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com. It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copeland. It's a Question of Balance has a topic hour and a guest hour. And right now we're featuring Out and About, thought-provoking conversations on the street. Let's hear my next conversation with Darren and Nora. Hello, my name's Ruth Copeland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
I'm Darren.
And I'm Nora.
Well, thanks so much for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week we're considering, if you are for something, must you be against something? There's a well-known quote from the Gospel of Matthew in the Bible, whoever is not with me is against me, or as expressed in the Gospel of Mark, whoever is not against us is for us. But in everyday life, if you are for something, must you automatically be against something else? It would seem with the current political climate and also the issues with the recent shootings by police and of police, that this is how many of us feel. We feel if we're pro-black, then we must be anti-police and vice versa. Or if we support one political candidate, then we must be against the others. So I'm wondering how you feel about this. If when you feel strongly for something, at the same time you feel you have to take up a position against something else.
No, I think from my perspective, it's not about being 100% for one and completely against the other. I think it's I weigh things up based on pros and cons, I guess, and so I favor something over something else, but I'm never completely against the opposite of what I'm for, if that makes sense.
Yes, yeah, that does. What about you?
I like to think that I see both sides of the coin. I'm just thinking of current situations. But also, I can definitely be completely against something like who's running for president and not waver at all. So I guess it depends on the topic of conversation.
Yeah. I mean, there's been some commentators who are from outside America who have said that in America, it does seem to be more the case that if you're for something, you have to be against the other. Like if you're for, I don't know, whoever, Trump or Hillary Clinton, then you have to almost hate the other candidate, you know, rather than just thinking, well, I'm for this person and I don't really care about the others. I'm just for this. I mean, is that something either of you can comment on? We know one of you being American, one from outside.
I think that's interesting. Also, we have different political views, right, most of the time. I think during this election, we're more in line, though. And I think this election, too, if we're talking about that, you tend to hate the opposite side. I mean, I feel pretty strongly about the opposite side, and but confused about my own side at the same time. Confused about what I really want, but I know what I don't want, and so I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. So you're being for whatever you're for is not making you against, in a way.
Yes.
What you're for is a reaction to what you're against in this
case. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Like.
Yes. Yeah. I think that you tend to have really strong opinions on the for what you're against and stand firmly. So yeah.
So that's leading you more to know what you actually are for.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That's interesting. What are your thoughts?
To your point earlier, I think about your perception of America, and so having lived here now for a while, I do believe that Americans do tend to entrench themselves into a particular viewpoint. And I'm not saying that outside of America people don't do that. It's just that here it does tend to, I think, come across more like that. I get a sense there's a lot here of generational influence, more so. So again, speaking for she is one way because her mother has said, and then so on and so forth.
Right.
So you know, I see a lot more of kind of that influencing. So whereas I think if you come again from Europe, I think there's a very wide difference of influences that allow force you to sort of, I think more outside your local environment. Whereas again, the not to be thinking, the U.S. has a perspective of itself of being the world, and so sometimes that can be. I think that influences sometimes how if you're born and raised here. But on the other side of that, I think there's also very vast differences in the U.S. as to where in the U.S. you come from.
That's very true too.
I think politically, as we all know, the edges of the U.S. are very much more Democratic, and the center is a lot more Republican. I think, especially in the middle, there's very staunch perspectives that I think there you'll find that they really are more, if you're for something, you have to be against the other side. So I think the country's so vast, it's hard to generalize, but I think there are pockets of the country that express that more. And I think that's what we're, again, seeing a little bit in today's landscape, is that people are for Trump or for Hillary, not necessarily giving any consideration to what either of them are saying or doing. It's just, I have to be, if I'm a Democrat, I'm a Democrat, whoever happens to be standing, yes. And I'm a Republican, no matter who it is, and either of them are probably no good for for us.
To your point about the generational influence, if we think about the other example I mentioned about the issue with the police, there has been a sort of entrenched perspective that the police, you know, if there's any criticism of the police, that it's going to sort of destroy a whole respect of the police and their sort of remit to be able to do their job. Do you think that is a generational thing as well? Do you think that's anything to do with, you know, the sort of a respect for authority and not sort of seeing that there may be nuances and it's possible to criticize authority and still maintain respect for it?
Yeah, I actually think that in terms of, I you know, so we have young children, and I think just not even in the context of the police, but I think overall, one of the things we as parents are constantly trying to install in our children is that ability to respect others and elders of different backgrounds and, you know, whatever that may be. And I think there's a lot of influence in those areas, again, for them to not, you know, or not comprehend or understand what's right or wrong in some of those things. And I think you're right in the respect of, you know, the elder generations grew up with a much more defined, I think, okay, if you're in a position of authority, respect it. Today's generation, we're taught more to challenge things. And I think we were kind of, when I was growing up, is challenge things that are not necessarily about respecting police or authority, but just challenging things in general. Are they, because we've done it this way, is this still the right way to do things? And I think that's kind of bled over now into areas that, you know, such as authority and the police, or, you know, even again, coming back, the politicians, right? Challenge them to the point of, are they really doing the right thing for the country? Are these people in authority? Because they shouldn't be above the law itself or the same constraints that we live in. But I do think over the generations, we've been sort of asked to challenge things, and now we challenge a lot more outside, I think, the original boundaries that was intended to be, maybe.
Yeah. And what about you? I mean, with something like the police, do you feel a generational influence in that, you know, we just have to support them no matter what, we have to be for them, you know? Do you find yourself in any way feeling like if you're for the police, you can't be for black people, or the reverse? It's almost like if you're for the police, then you're against blacks, or if you're for Black Lives Matter, then you must be against the police. Have you found yourself thinking like that at all, or any influence from the past with that?
I think this is seeing something from both sides, and I definitely, like Darren said, when I was young, it was, how could you question? And now we're teaching our children why, you know, you should question. You should absolutely question everything. But at the same time, I come from a place of put myself in their shoes, and I can see both sides. I have a brother who was in law enforcement, and I know what a difficult job that is. So there's a part of me that's defensive, but at the same time, every life matters, and there's not a question about that. So I think within any kind of job or any society, I guess, there are bad seeds. And so, unfortunately, that's tainted law enforcement. And
I mean, one of the problems with this is holding the truths that the police do a good job, yeah, and that the police also are killing innocent people. Yeah. And in a post on NetMap toolbox, Eva Schiffer writes, holding two conflicting truths in your mind at the same time is painful. Yeah. It somehow doesn't feel right, because from back in the caveman days, we are wired to pick one truth and run with it. Yeah. Mammoth or no mammoth, clear thing. If you accept conflicting truths, the world will yell at you, are you for us or against us? Make up your mind. And because you accept both truths, both parties will think you are against them, as you accept the truth of their opponents as well. And one way to deal with the pain of holding seemingly conflicting truths in mind is just to stop doing that by ignoring the information or seeking to discredit it. So I'm wondering whether either of you, when you feel strongly about something, do you feel a tendency to want to reject information that conflicts with your views, or to try to convert others to your way of thinking?
I think, yeah. No, I mean, definitely if I feel strongly, we feel strongly about things we were just having a conversation about, and I don't want to hear what he has to say about it. So definitely I hold on to what I believe, and eventually, because of age, we'll open up and listen more than I would maybe when I was younger. Yeah.
That's interesting, because there's some research that shows that as you get older, you become more conservative and more likely to hold your views. So I'm glad you're learning from life experience.
I think so. Yeah.
What about you?
I might disagree with her on the last point, but I think the point's a valid point that I think when you have two things that you kind of believe in, whether you do struggle with that, and I think it also depends a lot on we have friends. I think do you stand up or do you be quiet? And I think that's a little bit of again in society today we're seeing a lot more with people that have been quiet for a while are now standing up, right? Again, we see that, as you said, with the Black Lives Matter situation. You could argue that that's what people are saying about the Trump and other things, that people are now, coming out for him because, they've stayed quiet about things that they've, not been happy about. And I think that's where tension is, right, at the end of the day, is when you're have these opposite perspectives, and one side tends to be more vocal than the other, then eventually the other side comes up. I mean, we saw that in Turkey, right, with the uprising, the military coup, that it didn't last very long, but it's of the same ilk, right, which is that obviously one side was feeling not heard, and suddenly there's a tension that bursts. And so I think that's partly the challenge today, is we live in a world where I think there are people that are clearly on one side, people clearly on the other, and then there's a lot of people in the middle that are, as you said, can see both sides, and how do we all coexist without it ending up in the situations that we've seen over the recent times, because at the end of the day, I think everybody's entitled to their opinion. We just it's that element of how do we discuss openly and transparently and with respect for each other, to your other point, and be able to come to that thing. Because I think even in government here in the US, the word bipartisan is thrown around a lot, yet we don't see that in government. It's, again, even politicians, if you're over here, you got to be on opposite sides. I mean, that's, we get bills voted down all the time because there's no middle ground. It seems like there's very little middle ground anymore.
Yeah. In an article for the Creativity Post, Michael Michalko states, Albert Rothenberg, a noted researcher, identified a process he terms Janusian thinking, a process named after Janus, a Roman god who has two faces, each looking in the opposite direction. Genusian thinking is the ability to imagine two opposites or contradictory ideas, concepts or images existing simultaneously. Imagine, if you will, your mother existing as a young baby, an old woman simultaneously, or your pet existing and not existing at the same time. Rothenberg found that geniuses resorted to this mode of thinking quite often in the act of achieving original insights. Einstein, Mozart, Edison, Van Gogh, Pasteur, Joseph Conrad and Picasso all demonstrated this ability. I'm wondering what you think would happen if more of us were able to do this, to hold conflicting political views in mind, or the idea, for instance, that we can support the police and be critical of them. What effect do you think that might have on finding solutions to social problems?
I think that's actually where we, as I say, society needs it. So from a personal experience, Jess, I find myself there a lot, not just with political or the Black Lives Matter, but that's just in day-to-day in the work that I do, I have to do that. I have to look at both sides of things to understand what impacts there will be to other people and effectively, you know, talk and gather information from people to try and, you know, be collaborative and be and find that compromise, but at the same time understand that you have a role that you end up making a decision. So, but I think the important part is explaining the decision to both parties so that they understand why it was made. I think a lot of times we get people ask, hey, what's your opinion? We get the input, but then what doesn't come, what is all they see is the decision that, and to your, some of your earlier points, that decision is never seen to align with either people. Because right. It's that I took yours and I took theirs and I've made a decision that doesn't necessarily meet all of you, but yeah. It's the best thing for the kind of the consensus. Yeah. So I think one of
but
the
you kind of please no one in the process.
You please no one, but part of it is, again, it's that transparency, which is going back and explaining to them why the decision was made that way. Yes. I think sometimes we don't close the loop a lot. So that happens a lot where we ask for people's input, we gather it, a decision's made, but no one then understands why that decision was made. Again, to your point, is all they know is it wasn't the decision they wanted because it's not 100% in alignment with their perspective. Yeah. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the right decision. It's just this is how the decision was arrived at. So that thought process that the decision makers are in, I don't think they ever really come back and express why that decision was made that way after they've collected and gathered the information.
Yeah. That's an interesting point to explain it, but also this idea of a decision being valid when it does take aspects from both sides of thought, which I think is the way forward, really, isn't it? And yet, there does seem to be this incredible divisiveness of we all want it one way or the other way, especially, I notice that especially in America. I don't know about you, but and I don't know if you can comment on that. But.
Here it is... challenging in that, as you say, I think it comes back to a bit of what you said earlier. I think depending who you ask, where they're in, if they really want something, doesn't matter, you know, what arguments you put forward. Again, I have seen that a lot here with friends and that where you, and that's where you also have to understand, even sometimes for the sake of friendships, to know when to, you know, pull back or stop. But again, I do want to, I think there's in the US, I see it very differently in different parts of the US. So, you know, we're down the road from, Silicon Valley. There's a lot of people in that area that are very, very opinionated.
Yes.
And trying to sway them is sometimes almost impossible. Whereas I think if you go to other parts of the country, people are more open. And I think, you know, that's where... again, you can say there's pros and cons to that in terms of, I think the other thing we have to be careful of is what do we show as being successful? So, again, Silicon Valley is a great place where if you look, people that are successful tend to be very opinionated and actually don't tend to sway too much. And so, you know, again, we put that out there that to be successful, you almost have to have an opinion that you stick with. And to your earlier points, the other side of that is not something that's, you know, you can't sit in that middle and be conflicted. You're either for something or against something. Because to be for something, then you're motivated towards that, and that ends up what being successful kind of ends up looking like. I think we don't necessarily allow people in the middle part to be successful.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, thank you so much for your thoughts. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and our topic discussion this week. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made desserts in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And if you just joined us, It's a Question of Balance has a topic hour and a guest hour. Right now we're featuring out and about, thought-provoking conversations on the street. And if you have any thoughts about our topic this week, do email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. I'd love to hear from you. That's ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. And also wanted to encourage you to visit the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, where there's podcasts of all previous shows, and there's two tabs on the homepage of the website, guests and topics. And if you click on those, it brings up a whole page of photographs of all the different wonderful arts guests that we've had. And on the topics page, there's photographs representing the topics and the topic questions. And if you just click on any of the photographs or titles, it takes you through to the podcast page where there's information about the guest or topic, there's photographs, there's links to relevant websites, and of course, there's the audio to the actual show. So I encourage you to go and have a look around the website and maybe download or stream some past shows. We've had some really interesting discussions and guests. So again, that's itsaquestionofbalance.com. Well, last today, let's hear my conversation with Ilana and John. Hello, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
I'm John Thompson from Carmel.
Ilana.
Well, thanks so much, John and Ilana, for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week we're looking at, if you are for something, must you be against something? Trevor Noah on The Daily Show said, in America, if you take a stand for something, you are automatically against something else. Such a strange world to be in. You're either a cat person or a dog person. It's either one or the other. But with police shootings, it shouldn't have to work that way. For example, if you are pro-Black Lives Matter, you assume to be anti-police. And if you're pro-police, then surely you hate black people. In reality, you can be pro-cop and pro-black, which is what we should all be. It should be what we're aiming for. You shouldn't have to choose between the police and the citizens they are sworn to protect. However, it would seem with the current political climate and also the recent issues, the shootings by police and of the police, that this is a challenge for many of us. You know, we feel if we are pro-black, then we must be anti-police and vice versa. Or if we support one political candidate, then we must be against the others. So I'm wondering if when you feel strongly for something, whether that makes you then at the same time feel against something else.
Not necessarily, because I've worked in counseling and taught college and in the field of cognitive linguistics. And what interests me, what interests me is hearing a wide spectrum of thought on a topic.
Yeah.
And trying to understand each level in that.
Right. Yes.
And that's, I would rather listen to other people's opinion than talk about my own.
Right. Okay.
And my daughter.
So, what about you? If you feel strongly for something, do you find yourself feeling against something else, whether it be in politics or, you know?
Definitely not. I try to stray away from that. I study anthropology at UC Santa Cruz, so I'm definitely into not thinking about something in a very narrow-minded way.
Right.
I think even if you're completely against something, I've studied some things I thought I was completely against and would never understand at school. And you just gotta just see somebody else's thought process and just give it a second.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessary to immediately cut that off.
Right. One reason that might exist for the need to outright reject different views is cognitive dissonance. I don't know if you're familiar with Leon Festinger's theory of cognitive dissonance, which focuses on how humans strive for internal consistency, and mental stress and discomfort is created when a person holds two or more contradictory beliefs or is confronted by information which conflicts with held beliefs. And one way to reduce this cognitive dissonance or mental stress is to deny or ignore any information which conflicts with one's beliefs, or try to convert others to the same point of view. So I'm wondering whether you see that at all around you, you know, people wanting to reject information that conflicts with their views, or converting others to their way of thinking, because it sounds like both of you don't do that, but do you see that around you at all?
As I reach into my bag and I pull out
Wait for it.
This is what I was talking about.
Okay.
So. Susan Friend Harding of UCSC is our hero.
Yeah. What I was saying earlier about looking at something, for example, that's completely not what you thought growing up. I don't know anything about evangelical Christianity, but I read a book recently by one of the professors at my school, and she looked into it from a different point of view, and I gave it a chance. I just saw what I think you're talking about, just like having an opinion for I don't want to say for the sake of having an opinion, because it's not that, but just having, like, what tradition and, you know,
Well, it's sort of this...
The importance of that, yeah. Of, like, having a group and feeling included in something.
Yes, yeah. Well, it's sort of the impossibility to hold the idea that you can be right without having to think that others are wrong. And, I mean, fundamentalist religion is a good example, because you do often find that people will be saying the other side is evil or the devil, you know, depending on which, you know, religion it is, rather than just thinking, well, I don't agree with their ideas, but... leaving it at that. I mean, they're just...
You have completely different processes mentally of how the world came to be, and just because you don't think or agree that... I mean, I believe in evolution and all that, but maybe somebody's story, like, doesn't even involve that. Maybe it's like, yeah. No, really, my truth is that this is the way things happen. And it's... There's a point where you're like, you know, it's okay. Maybe I don't agree with that, but that I don't have to tell you that's not your truth.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And in speaking with being a counselor to inmates, uh-huh. and to troubled young people, and I would listen to their beliefs, and then I would ask clarifying questions to see how they came to acquire that belief. Now, the word in German, belief, lieb means love. So why they love that idea? And there are some people, it would be bizarre for my daughter and I to hear stories about the flood, where there's this Jehovah that commits this act of genocide against not just humanity, but Bambi and Thumper and everybody else. And there are some people that, some evangelicals believe that to be historically true. And so I wonder, how did they acquire that belief linguistically?
Right, yes.
Because
yeah.
It's a story.
Yeah.
These are all concepts. These yeah. aren't historical facts. And so I would ask them, well, when did you first learn about that and from who?
Yeah.
And it's often from a parent or a minister that they really respected.
Yes.
And they were infected with it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's not necessarily the right word. You don't want to say infected, because that's just their life. But yeah.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Contributors to Inside the Conversation at the Good Men Project commented on Speaker Seth Godin talking about the Marshmallow Project, which was an experiment carried out in the 70s at Stanford. A three-year-old child had a marshmallow placed in front of them and then was left alone for 15 minutes, having been told that if they did not eat the marshmallow in that 15 minutes, they would be given a second one. If they did eat it, there would be no more marshmallows. Following up 10 years later, they found that the children who did not eat the marshmallow were doing better in every way. And Seth Godin's takeaway from this is that these people were able to hold two conflicting thoughts in mind at the same time. I want to eat the marshmallow, and if I don't eat it, I will get more. This ability can lead to more creative thinking and solutions. So I'm wondering what you think would happen if more of us were able to do this, to hold conflicting political views in mind, or the idea, for example, that we can support the police and be critical of them, or we can have our religion and there be other religions. What effect do you think that might have on finding solutions to social problems?
I don't want to say it's as simple as that, but it's almost as simple as just giving it a second and thinking. I mean, it's hard. I mean, everybody is raised, I don't know. I just think it is tough, but I've worked on it, and I go to school to do this.
Right. So maybe education is one way that you can be able
to... Not necessarily like, oh, you have to go to a university, but definitely educating yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for example, at one time I was leading groups inside of Soledad State Prison, and I had a particular group, and everybody in the group was in there for one or more murders, and some of them were multiple murders.
Right.
And one-fourth of them were diagnosed as suffering from a psychosis, so they were on meds. And because this was an honors program, and these people are in there, they're very honest with it. They're very persuasive with me, that I found out that a lot of them had compulsive behaviors, admitted to compulsive behaviors as a pattern. So,
are you linking that to the not being able to not eat the marshmallow? Or not relating?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So they had what you just described was a factor in the way they thought.
Right.
But the complicating factor, by law, I can't ask him, well, what are you doing here in prison? Because
right,
I could read their file.
Yeah.
So what I'd do is I'd look at him and I'd say, so, bro, what were you doing the night before that happened? And I'd look him in the eye, and they'd just laugh, because they knew that I knew and they knew. It was, their judgment was impaired by drugs and alcohol.
Hmm.
So they had the compulsion and the inability to hold two conflicting thoughts. And they acted in aggressive ways.
Well, in that instance, I think perhaps we could deduce that your ability to hold two conflicting thoughts and make a better decision is impaired by a substance.
The
one
suffering
what you're saying,
from a psychosis definitely had that pattern.
All people who have conflicting thoughts and can't handle it immediately are psychotic.
I mean, we can't, as you said, oversimplify it. Obviously, this is a very complex issue, but just the idea of perhaps trying to get away from it having to be for and against, you know, holding more complex views of what are very complex situations might be helpful. Would you agree?
I would say more than might. That's what I study every day. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your opinions. I really appreciate it.
And thank you for stopping us.
Yeah, thank you. This is fun.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And there you have it from Ilana. It can actually be fun talking to me. So thanks again to everybody who took part in my on-the-street conversations this week. It was sort of a relatively deep topic. And so I was really grateful for their time in giving their views. And the purpose, as I mentioned earlier, of this is to try and pose questions that make us think. I'm not really interested in telling you what to think. I'm more interested in making you think. So hopefully that might have been your experience listening today. And as I've mentioned through the show, It's a Question of Balance has a topic hour and an arts guest hour. So be sure to tune in to hear inspiring, in-depth interviews with guests from the arts, as well as thought-provoking topic discussions on the street. And remember to check out the website for podcasts to listen to anytime, anywhere. It's a question of balance.com. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to you joining me again for the next show.